You learn more from bad art than you do from good art, as your mistakes are more important than your successes. Plus, good art usually evokes the same emotions in people. Most good art is the same kind of good. But bad pieces can each be bad in their own unique way. So I'm glad we have bad art, and I'm sure the Almighty agrees.
All this, Idlin said, amused. To justify your sense of humor, Shallan?
My sense of humor? No. I'm merely trying to justify the creation of Captain Kaladin.
Ignoring her, Kaladin squinted eastward. The clouds behind them were lightening from deep, brooding black and gray to a more general blandness, the color of rock's morning mush. The storm was near to ending. What arrived with a fanfare ended with an extended sigh, gales giving way to peaceful rain.
Drahi! Scar! Kaladin called. Keep everyone in the air. I'm going to go scout below.
The two gave him salutes, and Kaladin dropped through the clouds, which, from within, looked like dirty fog. Kaladin came out crusted in frost, and rain began pelting him, but it was growing weak. Thunder rumbled softly above. Enough light seeped through the clouds for him to survey the landscape. Indeed, the city was close, and it was majestic. But he forced himself to look for enemies before marveling. He noted a broad plain before the city, a killing field kept free of trees or large boulders so that neither could offer cover to an invading army. That was empty, which wasn't unexpected. The question was, who held the city? Voidbringers or humans? He cautiously descended. The place glowed with a sprinkling of stormlight from cages left out in the storm to recharge the gems. And, yes, from guard posts flew Alethi flags, raised now that the worst of the storm had passed. Kaladin let out a relieved sigh. Kolinar had not fallen, though if their reports were right, all surrounding towns were occupied. In fact, looking closely, he could see that the enemy had begun building storm shelters on the killing field, bunkers from which they could prevent resupply to Kolinar. They were mere foundations of brick and mortar for now. During the times between storms, they were likely guarded and built up by large enemy forces. He finally let himself stare at Kolinar. He knew it was coming, inevitable as a budding yawn. He couldn't keep it down forever. First assess the area for danger, get the lay of the land. Then, gawk. Storms, that city was beautiful. He'd flown high above it once in a half-dream where he'd seen the Stormfather. That hadn't affected him the way it did to float here, looking over the vast metropolis. He'd seen proper cities now. The war camps together were probably larger than Kolinar, so it wasn't the size that amazed him, really, but the variety. He was accustomed to functional bunkers, not stone buildings of many shapes and roofing styles. Kolinar's defining feature, of course, was the wind blades, curious rock formations that rose from the stone like the fins of some giant creature, mostly hidden beneath the surface. The large curbs of stone glittered with red, white, and orange strata, their hues deepened by the rain. He hadn't realized that the city walls were partially constructed on the tops of the outer wind blades. There, the lower sections of the walls literally sprouted from the ground, while men had built fortifications atop them, evening out the heights and filling spaces between the curves. Towering over the northern side of the city was the palace complex, which rose high and confident, as if in defiance of the storms. The palace was like a little city unto itself, with bright columns, rotundas, and turrets. And something was very, very wrong with it. A cloud hung over the palace, a darkness that, at first glance, seemed like nothing more than a trick of the light. Yet the feeling of wrongness persisted, and seemed strongest around a portion at the east of the palace complex. This flat, raised plaza was filled with small buildings. The palace monastery. The Oathgate platform. Kaladin narrowed his eyes, then lashed himself back upward, passing into the clouds. He had probably let himself gape for too long, He didn't want to start talk of a glowing person in the sky. Still, that city. In Kaladin's heart still lived a country boy who had dreamed of seeing the world.
"Did you see that darkness around the palace?" Kaladin asked Syl.
"Yeah," she whispered. "Something's very wrong."
Kaladin emerged from the clouds and found that his crew had drifted off to the west in the breeze. He lashed himself toward them and noticed, for the first time, that his stormlight was no longer being renewed by the storm. Drahi and Scar looked visibly relieved when he arrived.
"Cal!"
Scar started.
"I know. We don't have much time left. Your Majesty, the city is right below us, and our forces still control the walls. The Parshendi are building storm bunkers and besieging the area, though the bulk of their army probably retreated to nearby towns in anticipation of the storm."
"The city stands," Elokar said. "Excellent! Captain, take us down!"
"Your Majesty," Kaladin said, "if we drop from the sky like this, the enemy scouts will see us entering."
"So," Elokar said, "the need for subterfuge was predicated on a fear that we might have to sneak in. If our forces still hold the city, we can march up to the palace, assert command, and activate the Oathgate."
Kaladin hesitated.
"Your Majesty, something is wrong with the palace. It looks dark, and Syl saw it too. I advise caution."
"My wife and child are inside," Elokar said. "They might be in danger."
"You didn't seem to worry much about them during 6 years away at war," Kaladin thought.
"Let's go down anyway," the king said. "We want to get to the Oathgate as soon as possible."
He trailed off, looking from Kaladin to Shallan to Adolin.
"Don't we?"
"I advise caution," Kaladin repeated.
"The bridgeman isn't the jumpy type, Your Majesty," Adolin said. "We don't know what's going on in the city or what happened since the reports of chaos and a revolt. Caution sounds good to me."
"Very well," Elokar said. "This is why I brought the Lightweaver. What do you recommend, Brightness?"
"Let's land outside the city," Shallan said. "Far enough away that the glow of stormlight doesn't give us away. We can use illusions to sneak in and find out what is going on without revealing ourselves."
"Very well," Elokar said, nodding curtly. "Do as she suggests, Captain."
61. Nightmare Made Manifest. "We can record any secret we wish and leave it here? How do we know that they'll be discovered?"
"Well, I don't care. Record that then."
From Drawer 2-3, Smokestone. The enemy army was letting refugees approach the city. At first, this surprised Kaladin. Wasn't the point of a siege to prevent people from getting in? And yet a constant stream of people was allowed to approach Kolinar. The gates stood closed against an army invasion, but the side doors, which were still large, were wide open. Kaladin handed the spyglass to Adolin. They'd landed in an inconspicuous location, then hiked back to the city on foot. But it had been dark by the time they'd arrived. They'd decided to spend the night outside the city, hidden by one of Shallan's illusions. Impressively, her light weaving had lasted all night on very little stormlight. Now that morning had arrived, they were surveying the city, which was maybe a mile away. From the outside, their hideout would seem like merely another knob of stone ground. Shallan couldn't make it transparent from only one side, so they had to see out using a slit that, if someone walked close by, would be visible. The illusion felt like a cave, except for the fact that wind and rain went right through it. The king and Shallan had grumbled all morning, complaining of a damp, cold night. Kaladin and his men had slept like stones. There were advantages to having lived through Bridge 4.
"They let refugees in so they can drain the city's resources," Adolin said, watching through the spyglass. "A solid tactic."
"Brightness, Shallan,"
Elokar said, accepting the spyglass from Adolin.
"You can give each of us illusions, right? We can pretend to be refugees and enter the city easily."
Shallan nodded absently. She sat sketching near a shaft of light pouring through a small hole in the ceiling. Adolin turned his spyglass toward the palace, the top of which surmounted the city in the distance. The day was perfectly sunny, bright, and crisp, with only a hint of moisture in the air from the high storm the day before. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. But somehow the palace was still in shadow.
"What could it be?" Adolin said, lowering his spyglass.
"One of them," Shallan whispered. "The Unmade."
Kaladin looked back at her. She'd sketched the palace, but it was twisted, with odd angles and distorted walls. Ilikar studied the palace.
"You were right to recommend caution, Windrunner. My instinct is still to rush in. That's wrong, isn't it? I must be prudent and careful."
They gave Shallan time to finish sketches. She claimed to need them for complex illusions. Eventually, she stood, flipping pages in her sketchpad.
"All right. Most of us won't need disguises, as nobody will recognize me or my attendants. Same goes for Kaladin's men, I assume."
"If someone does recognize me," Scar said, "it won't cause any problems. Nobody here knows what happened to me at the Shattered Plains."
Drahi nodded.
"All right,"
Shallan said, turning to Kaladin and Adolin.
"You two will get new faces and clothing, making you into old men."
"I don't need a disguise," Kaladin said.
"You spent time with those Parshmen earlier in the month," Shallan said. "Best to be safe. Besides, you scowl at everyone like an old man anyway. You'll be a great fit."
Kaladin glowered at her.
"Perfect. Keep it up."
Shallan stepped over and breathed doubt, and stormlight wreathed him. He felt he should be able to take it in, use it, but it resisted him. It was a strange sensation, as if he'd found a glowing coal that gave off no heat. The stormlight vanished, and he held up a hand which now appeared wizened. His uniform coat had been changed to a homespun brown jacket. He touched his face, but didn't feel anything different. Adolin pointed at him.
"Shallan, that is positively wretched. I'm impressed."
"What?"
Kaladin looked at his men. Drahi winced. Shallan wrapped Adolin in light. He resolved into a sturdy, handsome man in his 60s with dark brown skin, white hair, and a lean figure. His clothing was no longer ornate, but in good repair. He looked like the kind of old rogue you'd find in a pub, with handy tales about the brilliant things he'd done in his youth. The kind of man that made women think they preferred older men, when in reality they just preferred him.
"Oh, now that's unfair,"
Kaladin said.
"If I stretch a lie too far, people are more likely to be suspicious,"
Shallan said lightly, then stepped over to the king.
"Your Majesty, you're going to be a woman."
"Fine,"
Ilikar said. Kaladin started. He'd have expected an objection. Judging by the way that Shallan seemed to stifle a quip, she'd been expecting one too.
"You see," she said instead, "I don't think you can keep from carrying yourself like a king, so I figure that if you look like a high-born, light-eyed woman, it's less likely that you'll be memorable to the guards who—"
"I said it was fine, Lightweaver,"
Ilikar said.
"We mustn't waste time. My city and nation are in peril."
Shallan breathed out again, and the king was transfigured into a tall, stately Alethi woman, with features reminiscent of Yasna's. Kaladin nodded appreciatively. Shallan was right. There was something about the way Ilikar held himself that bespoke nobility. This was an excellent way to deflect people who might wonder who he was. As they gathered their packs, Syl zipped into the enclosure. She took the shape of a young woman and flitted up to Kaladin, then stepped back in the air, aghast.
"Oh!"
she said.
"Wow!"
Kaladin glared at Shallan.
"What did you do to me?"
"Oh, don't be that way," she said. "This will only highlight your excellent personality."
"Don't let her get to you," Kaladin thought. "She wants to get to you." He hefted his pack. It didn't matter what he looked like. It was only an illusion. But what had she done? He led the way out of their enclosure, and they fell into a line. The rock illusion melted away behind them. Kaladin's men had brought generic blue uniforms with no insignias. They could have belonged to any minor house guard within the Kolin princedom. Shallan's too had on generic brown uniforms, and with Elokar wearing the dress of a light-eyed woman, they actually looked like a real refugee group. Elokar would be seen as a bright lady who had fled, without even a palanquin or carriage, before the enemy's advance. She'd brought a few guards, some servants, and Shallan as her young ward. And Kaladin was her... what? Storms.
Still,
he growled,
could I summon you not as a sword, but as a flat, shiny piece of metal?
A mirror? She asked, flying along beside him.
Not sure if it's possible.
Not sure if it's dignified.
Dignified? Since when have you cared about dignity?
I'm not to be toyed with. I'm a majestic weapon to be used only in majestic ways.
She hummed to herself and flitted away. Before he could call her back to complain, Elokar caught up to him.
Slow down, Captain,
the king said. Even his voice had changed to sound womanly.
You'll outpace us.
Reluctantly, Kaladin slowed. Elokar didn't show what he thought of Kaladin's face. The king kept his eyes forward. He never did think much about other people, so that was normal.
They call it the Windrunner, you know,
the king said softly. It took Kaladin a moment to realize that Elokar was referring to the river that ran past Kolinar. Their path took them across it on a wide stone bridge.
The Alethi Light Eyes rule because of you. Your order was prominent here in what was then Alethala. Our quest is vital, Elokar continued. We can't afford to let this city fall. We cannot afford mistakes. I assure you, Your Majesty,
Kaladin said.
I don't intend to make mistakes.
Elokar glanced at him, and for a moment Kaladin felt he could see the real king. Not because the illusion was failing, but because of the way Elokar's lips tightened, his brow creased, and his gaze became so intense.
I wasn't speaking of you, Captain, the king said quietly. I was referring to my own limitations. When I fail this city, I want to make sure you are there to protect it.
Kaladin looked away, ashamed. Had he really just been thinking of how selfish this man was?
Your Majesty, no,
Elokar said firmly.
This is a time to be realistic. A king must do whatever he can for the good of his people, and my judgment has proven deficient. Anything I have accomplished in life has been handed to me by my father or my uncle. You are here, Captain, to succeed when I fail. Remember that. Open the oath gate, see that my wife and child are ushered through it to safety, and return with an army to reinforce the city.
I'll do my best, Your Majesty.
No, Elokar said. You'll do what I command. Be extraordinary, Captain. Nothing else will suffice.
Storms. How was it that Elokar could give a compliment and yet be insulting at the same time? Kaladin felt a weight at hearing words that reminded him of his days in Amaram's army, back when people had first started talking about him, expecting things from him. Those rumors had become a challenge, creating for everyone the notion of a man who was like Kaladin, but at the same time greater than he could ever be. He'd used that fictional man, relied upon him, to equip his team and to get soldiers transferred to his squad. Without it, he'd never have met Tara. It was useful to have a reputation, so long as it didn't crush you. The king dropped back farther into the line. They crossed the killing field under the watchful eyes of bowmen atop the wall. It made Kaladin's back itch, though they were Alethi soldiers. He tried to ignore it by focusing on studying the wall as they stepped into its shadow.
Those strata, he thought, remind me of the tunnels in Urethiru. Could there be some connection? He glanced over his shoulder as Adolin came up to him. The disguised prince winced as he looked at Kaladin.
Hey,
Adolin said.
Wow. That's really distracting.
Storming woman.
What do you want?
I've been thinking, Adolin said. We'll want a place inside the city to hole up, right? We can't follow either of our original plans. We can't simply stride up to the palace, but we don't want to assault it either. Not until we've done a little scouting.
Kaladin nodded. He hated the prospect of spending too much time in Kolinar. None of the other bridgemen had gotten far enough to swear the second ideal, so Bridge Four would be unable to practice with their powers until he returned. At the same time, the Shadowed Palace was disquieting. They did need to spend a few days gathering intelligence.
Agreed,
Kaladin said.
Do you have any ideas for where we can set up?
I've got just the place. Run by people I trust. And close enough to the palace to do some scouting, but far enough away not to get caught in whatever is going on there. Hopefully.
He looked concerned.
What was it like?
Kaladin asked.
The thing beneath the tower that you and Shallan fought.
Shallan has pictures. You should ask her.
I've seen them in the reports Dalinar's scribes gave me,
Kaladin said.
What was it like?
Adolin turned his blue eyes back to their path. The illusion was so real it was hard to believe it was actually him, but he did walk the same way, with that inborn confidence only a light eyes had.
It was wrong,
Adolin finally said.
Haunting. A nightmare made manifest. Kind of like my face?
Kaladin asked. Adolin glanced at him, then grinned.
Fortunately, Shallan covered it up for you with that illusion.
Kaladin found himself smiling. The way Adolin said things like that made it clear he was joking, and not only at your expense. Adolin made you want to laugh with him. They drew close to the entrance. Though dwarfed by the main city gates, the side doors were wide enough to admit a cart. Unfortunately, the entrance was blocked by soldiers and a crowd was accumulating, anger spren boiling on the ground around them. The refugees shook their fists and shouted at being barred entrance. They'd been letting people in earlier. What was happening? Kaladin glanced at Adolin, then gestured with his chin.
Check it out?
We'll go have a look, Adolin said, turning toward the others of their group. Wait here.
Scar and Drahi stopped, but Elokar followed as Kaladin and Adolin continued forward, and so did Shallan. Her servants hesitated briefly, then trailed after her. Storms, the command structure in this expedition was going to be a nightmare. Elokar imperiously marched forward and barked at people to move out of his way. Reluctantly, they did. A woman with his bearing was not someone to cross. Kaladin exchanged a wearied glance with Adolin, then both fell in beside the king.
I demand entry,
Elokar said, reaching the front of the crowd, which had swelled to some 50 or 60 people, with more steadily arriving. The small group of guards looked over Elokar, and their captain spoke.
How many fighting men can you provide for the city defense?
None,
Elokar snapped.
They are my personal guard.
Then, Brightness, you should march them personally on to the south and try another city.
Where?
Elokar demanded, the sentiment echoed by many in the crowd.
There are monsters everywhere, Captain.
Word is that there are fewer to the south, the soldier said, pointing. Regardless, Kolinar is full to bursting. You won't find sanctuary here. Trust me. Move on. The city...
Who is your superior?
Elokar cut in.
I serve High Marshal Azure of the Wall Guard.
High Marshal Azure? I've never heard of such a man. Do these people look like they can walk farther? I command you to let us enter the city.
I'm under orders to only let a set number in each day, the guard said with a sigh. Kaladin recognized that sense of exasperation. Elikar could bring it out in the most patient of guards.
We've passed the limit. You'll need to wait until tomorrow.
People growled, and more anger spren appeared around them.
It's not that we're callous, the guard captain called. Will you just listen? The city is low on food, and we're running out of room in storm shelters. Every person we add strains our resources further. But the monsters are focused here. If you flee to the south, you can take refuge there, maybe even get to Yakaved.
Unacceptable, Elikar said. You've gotten these inane orders from that Azure fellow. Who commands him?
The High Marshal has no commander.
What?
Elikar demanded.
What of Queen Aesudan?
The guard just shook his head. Look, are those two men yours? He pointed at Drahi and Scar, still standing near the back of the crowd.
They look like good soldiers. If you assign them to the wall guard, I'll give you immediate entry, and we'll see that you get a grain ration.
Not that one, though, another guard said, nodding toward Kaladin. He looks sick.
Impossible, Elikar demanded. I need my guards with me at all times.
Brightness, the captain said.
Storms, but Kaladin empathized with the poor man. Syl suddenly grew alert, zipping into the sky as a ribbon of light. Kaladin immediately stopped paying attention to Elikar and the guards. He searched the sky until he saw figures flying toward the wall in a V formation. There were at least 20 Voidbringers, each trailing a plume of dark energy. Above, soldiers began to scream. The urgent call of drums followed, and the guard captain cursed in response. He and his men charged in through the open doors, then ran toward the nearest stairs leading up to the wall walk.
In,
Adolin said as other refugees surged forward. He grabbed the king and towed him inside. Kaladin fought against the press, refusing to be pushed into the city. He instead craned his neck to look upward, watching the Voidbringers hit the wall. Kaladin's angle at the base was terrible for making sense of the action directly above. A few men got tossed off the wall farther along. Kaladin took a step toward them, but before he could do anything, they crashed to the ground with strikingly loud impacts. Storms! He was shoved farther toward the city by the crowd, and barely restrained himself from drawing in stormlight.
Steady, he told himself. The point is to get in without being seen. You would ruin that by flying to the defense of the city?
But he was supposed to protect.
Kaladin!
Adolin called, fighting back through the crowd to where Kaladin stood right outside.
Come on!
They're dominating that wall, Adolin. We should go help.
Help how? Adolin said.
He leaned in, speaking softly.
Summon shard blades and swing them wildly in the air like a farmer chasing sky eels? This is merely a raid to test our defenses. It's not a full-on assault.
Kaladin drew in a breath, then let Adolin pull him into the city.
2 dozen of the fused. They could take this city with ease.
Not alone, Adolin said. Everyone knows that shardbearers can't hold ground. It should be the same for Radiance and those fused. You need soldiers to take a city. Let's move.
They went inside and met with the others, then moved away from the walls and gates. Kaladin tried to close his ears to the distant shots of the soldiers. As Adolin had guessed, the raid ended as abruptly as it had begun, the fused soaring away from the wall after only a few minutes of fighting. Kaladin sighed, watching them go, then steeled himself and followed with the rest as Adolin led them down a wide thoroughfare. Kolinar was both more impressive and more depressing from the inside. They passed endless side streets packed with tall 3-story homes built like stone boxes. And storms, the guard at the wall had not been exaggerating. People crowded every street. Kolinar didn't have many alleyways. The stone buildings were built right up against each other in long rows. But people sat in the gutters, clinging to blankets and meager possessions. Too many doors were closed. Often on nice days like this, people in the war camps would leave the thick storm doors and shutters open to the breeze. Not here. They were locked up tightly for fear of being overwhelmed by refugees. Shallan's soldiers pulled tight around her, hands carefully on their pockets. They seemed familiar with the underbelly of city life. Fortunately, she'd accepted Kaladin's pointed suggestion and hadn't brought Gaz. Where are the patrols? Kaladin thought as they walked through curving streets, up and down slopes. With all these people clogging the streets, surely they needed as many men as possible keeping the peace. He didn't see anything until they passed out of the section of city nearest the gates and entered a more wealthy area. This part was dominated by larger homes with grounds marked by iron fences anchored into the stone with hardened creme. Behind those were guards, but the streets were devoid of anything similar. Kaladin felt the gaze of the refugees, the wondering. Was it worth robbing him? Did it matter? Did they have food? Fortunately, the spears Scar and Drahi carried, along with the cudgels held by Shallan's two men, seemed enough to deter any would-be robbers. Kaladin quickened his pace to catch up to Adolin at the front of their little group.
Is this safe house of yours close? I don't like the feeling on these streets.
It's away yet, Adolin said. But I agree. Storms, I should have brought a side sword. Who knew I'd be worried about summoning my blade?
Why can't shardbearers hold a city? Kaladin asked.
Basic military theory, Adolin said. Shardbearers do a great job killing people, but what are they going to do against the population of an entire city? Murder everyone who disobeys? They'd get overwhelmed, shards or not. Those flying void bringers will need to bring in the entire army to take the city. But first they'll test the walls, maybe weaken the defenses.
Kaladin nodded. He liked to think he knew a great deal about warfare, but the truth was he didn't have the training of a man like Adolin. He'd participated in wars, but he'd never run any. The farther they got from the walls, the better things seemed to be in the city. Fewer refugees, more sense of order. They passed a market that was actually open, and inside he finally spotted a policing force. A tight group of men wearing unfamiliar colors. This area would have looked nice under other circumstances. Ridges of shale bark along the street, manicured with a variety of colors, some like plates, others like knobby branches reaching upward. Cultivated trees, which rarely pulled in their leaves, sprouted in front of many of the buildings, gripping the ground with thick roots that melded into the stone. Refugees huddled in family groups. Here the buildings were built in large square layouts, with windows facing inward and courtyards at the centers. People crowded into these, turning them into improvised shelters. Fortunately, Kaladin saw no obvious starvation, so the city's food stores hadn't given out yet.
"Did you see that?" Shallan asked softly, joining him.
"What?"
Kaladin asked, looking over his shoulder.
"Performers in that market over there, dressed in very odd clothing."
Shallan frowned, pointing down an intersecting street as they passed.
"There's another one."
It was a man dressed all in white with strips of cloth that streamed and fluttered as he moved. Head down, he stood on a street corner, leaping back and forth from one position to another. When he looked up and met Kaladin's eyes, he was the first stranger that day who didn't immediately look away. Kaladin watched until a chow pulling a wagon of storm refuse blocked his view. Then, ahead of them, people started clearing the street.
"To the side," Elikar said. "I'm curious about what this could be."
They joined the crowds pressed up against the buildings, Kaladin shoving his hands in his pack to protect the large number of spears he had tucked away in a black purse there. Soon, a strange procession came marching down the center of the street. These men and women were also dressed like performers, their clothes augmented with brightly colored strips of red, blue, or green fabric. They walked past, calling out nonsense phrases. Words Kaladin knew, but which didn't belong together.
"What in damnation is happening in this city?" Adolin muttered.
"This isn't normal,"
Kaladin whispered.
"We have buskers and street performers, but nothing like this. Storms. What are they?"
Spren, Shallan whispered. They're imitating Spren. Look, those are like flame Spren, and the ones of white and blue with the flowing ribbons? Wind Spren. Emotion Spren, too. There's pain, that's fear, anticipation.
So it's a parade,
Kaladin said, frowning.
But nobody is having any fun.
The heads of spectators bowed, and people murmured, or prayed. Nearby, an Alethi refugee, wrapped in rags and holding a sniveling baby in her arms, leaned against a building. A burst of exhaustion Spren appeared above her, like jets of dust rising in the air. Only these were bright red instead of the normal brown, and seemed distorted.
This is wrong, 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 Syl said from Kaladin's shoulder. Oh, that Spren is from him, Kaladin.
Shallan watched the rising, not exhaustion Spren with widening eyes. She took Adolin by the arm.
Keep us moving, she hissed.
He started pushing through the crowd toward a corner where they could cut away from the strange procession. Kaladin grabbed the king by the arm while Drahi, Scar, and Shallan's two guards instinctively formed up around them. The king let Kaladin pull him away, and a good thing, too. Elokar had been fishing in his pocket, perhaps for a sphere to give the exhausted woman. Storms in the middle of the crowd.
Not far now,
Adolin said once they had breathing room on the side street.
Follow me.
He led them to a small archway where the buildings had been built around a shared courtyard garden. Of course, refugees had taken shelter there, many of them huddled in blanket tents that were still wet from the storm the day before. Life Spren bobbed among the plants. Adolin carefully wound his way through all the people to get to the door he wanted and then knocked. It was the back door facing the courtyard instead of the street. Was this a rich person's wine house, perhaps? It seemed more like a home, though. Adolin knocked again, looking worried. Kaladin stepped up beside him, then froze. On the door was a shiny steel plate with engraved numbers. In it, he could see his reflection.
Almighty above,
Kaladin said, poking at the scars and bulges on his face, some with open sores. Big teeth jutted from his mouth, and one eye was higher in his head than the other. His hair grew out in patches, and his nose was tiny.
What did you do to me, woman?
I've recently learned, Shallan said, that a good disguise can be memorable, so long as it makes you memorable for the wrong reason. You, Captain, have a way of sticking in people's heads, and I worried you would do so no matter what face you wore. So I enveloped it with something even more memorable.
I look like some kind of hideous Spren.
Hey, Syl said.
The door finally opened, revealing a short, matronly Thalen woman in an apron and vest. Behind her stood a burly man with a white beard cut after the horn-eater style.
What? She said. Who are you?
Oh, Adolin said. Shallan, I'll need...
Shallan rubbed his face with a towel from her pack as if to remove makeup, covering the transformation as his face became his own again. Adolin grinned at the woman, and her jaw dropped.
Prince Adolin? She said. Hurry, hurry, get in here. It's not safe outside.
She ushered them in and quickly shut the door. Kaladin blinked at the sphere-lit chamber, its walls lined with bolts of cloth and dummies with half-finished coats on them.
What is this place?
Kaladin asked.
Well, I figured we'd want someplace safe, Adolin said. We'd need to stay with someone I'd trust with my life or more.
He looked at Kaladin, then gestured toward the woman.
So I brought us to my tailor.
62. Research. I wish to submit my formal protest at the idea of abandoning the tower. This is an extreme step, taken rashly. From Drawer 222, Smokestone. Secrets. The city was brimming with them. It was stuffed with them so tightly they couldn't help but ooze out. The only thing for Shallan to do then was punch herself in the face. That was harder than it seemed. She always flinched. Come on, she thought, making a fist. With eyes squeezed shut, she braced herself, then smacked her free hand into the side of her head. It barely hurt. She simply wasn't capable of hitting herself hard enough. Maybe she could get Adolin to do it for her. He was in the back workroom of the tailor's shop. Shallan had excused herself to step into the front showroom, as she figured the others would react poorly to her trying to actively attract a pain spren. She could hear their voices as they interrogated the polite tailor. "It started with the riots, Your Majesty," the woman said in response to a question from Elokar. "Or maybe before, with the... Well, it's complicated. Oh, I can't believe that you're here. I've had passion for something to happen true, but to finally... I mean..." "Take a deep breath, Yogska," Adolin said gently. Even his voice was adorable. "Once you've taken all this in, we can continue." Secrets, Shallan thought. Secrets caused all of this. Shallan peeked into the other room. The king, Adolin, Yogska the tailor, and Kaladin sat inside, all wearing their own faces again. They'd sent Kaladin's men, along with Red, Ishna, and Vatha, off with the tailor's housemaid to prepare the upper rooms and attic to accommodate guests. Yogska and her husband would be sleeping on pallets in the back room here. Naturally, Elokar had been given their room. Right now, the small group had arranged a circle of wooden chairs under the heedless watch of tailor's dummies, wearing a variety of half-finished coats. Similar finished coats were displayed around the showroom. They were made in bright colors, even brighter than the Alethi wore at the Shattered Plains, with gold or silver thread, shiny buttons, and elaborate embroidery on the large pockets. The coats didn't close at the front except for a few buttons right below the collar, while the sides flared out, then split into tails at the back. "It was the execution of the Ardent Bright Lord," Yogska said. "The queen had her hanged, and... Oh, it was so gruesome! Blessed passion, Your Majesty. I don't want to speak ill of your wife. She must not have realized. Just tell us," Elokar said. "Do not fear reprisal. I must know what the city's people think." Yogska trembled. She was a small, plump woman who wore her long Thalen eyebrows curled in twin ringlets and was probably very fashionable in that skirt and blouse. Shallan lingered in the doorway, curious as to what the tailor had to say. "Well," Yogska continued, "during the riots, the queen basically vanished. We'd get proclamations from her now and then, but they often didn't make much sense. It all went wrong at the Ardent's death. The city was already in an uproar. She wrote such awful things, Your Majesty, about the state of the monarchy and the queen's faith, and..."
"And Aesudan condemned her to death," Elokar said.
Lit only by a few spheres at the center of their circle, his face was half-shadowed. It was a most intriguing effect, and Shallan took a memory for later sketching.
"Yes, Your Majesty.
It was the Dark Spren, obviously, who gave the actual order," Elokar said. "The Dark Spren that is controlling the palace. My wife would never be so imprudent as to publicly execute an Ardent during such parlous times."
"Oh, yes, of course. Dark Spren. In the palace."
Yogska sounded relieved to have a rationale for not blaming the queen. Shallan considered, then noticed a pair of fabric scissors on a ledge nearby. She snatched them, then ducked back into the showroom. She pulled her skirt to the side, then stabbed herself in the leg with the scissors. The sharp pain seared up her leg and through her body.
"Mmm," Pattern said. "Destruction. This is not normal for you, Shallan. Too far."
She trembled at the pain. Blood welled from the wound, but she pressed her hand against it to limit its spread. There. That had done it. Painspren appeared around her, as if crawling out of the ground, like little disembodied hands. They looked skinless, made of sinew. Normally they were bright orange, but these were a sickly green. And they were also wrong. Instead of human hands, these seemed to be from some kind of monster. Too distorted, with claws jutting from the sinew. Shallan eagerly took a memory, still holding her Hava skirt up to keep it from the blood.
"Does that not hurt?"
Pattern asked, from where he'd moved onto the wall.
"Of course it does,"
Shallan said, her eyes watering. "That was the point." He buzzed, worried, but he needn't have been, as Shallan had what she wanted. Satisfied, she took in a little stormlight and healed up, then used some cloth from her satchel to wipe the blood from her leg. She rinsed her hands and the cloth in the washroom basin. She was surprised at the running water. She hadn't thought Kolinar had such things. She took out her drawing pad and returned to the back room's doorway, where she leaned against the jamb, doing a quick sketch of the strange, twisted painspren. Yasna would tell her to put down her sketch pad and go sit with the others, but Shallan often paid better attention with a sketch pad in her hands. People who didn't draw never seemed to understand that.
"Tell us about the palace," Kaladin said. "The dark spren, as His Majesty put it."
Yokska nodded. "Oh yes, Bright Lord." Shallan glanced up to catch Kaladin's reaction at being called Bright Lord, but he didn't show one. His illusory disguise was gone, though Shallan had tucked that sketch away for possible further use. He'd summoned his blade earlier in the morning, and he now had eyes as blue as any she'd seen. They hadn't faded yet.
"There was that unexpected high storm," Yokska continued. "And after that the weather went insane. The rain started going in fits and starts. But oh, when that new storm came, the one with the red lightning, it left a gloom over the palace. So nasty. Dark times. I suppose those haven't ended."
"Where were the royal guards?" Elokar said. "They should have augmented the watch, restored order during the rioting."
"The palace guard retreated into the palace, Your Majesty," Yokska said. "And she ordered the city watch to barricade into the barracks. They eventually moved to the palace on the queen's orders. They haven't been seen since."
"Storms," Shallan thought, continuing her sketch.
"Oh, I guess I'm jumping about, but I forgot," Yokska continued. "In the middle of the rioting, a proclamation came from the queen. Oh, Your Majesty. She wanted to execute the city's parshmen. Well, we all thought she must be. I'm sorry, but we thought she must be mad. Poor things. What have they ever done? That's what we thought. We didn't know. Well, the queen posted criers all over the city proclaiming the parshmen to be void bringers. And I must say, about that she was right. Yet it was still so strange. She didn't even seem to notice that half the city was rioting."
"The dark spren," Elokar said, making a fist. "It must be blamed. Not Aesudan."
"Were there reports of any strange murders?" Adolin asked. "Murders or violence that came in pairs. A man would die and then a few days later someone else would be killed in the exact same way?"
"No, Bright Lord. Nothing like that. Though there were many who were killed."
Shallan shook her head. It was a different unmade here. Another ancient spren of odium. Religion and lore spoke of them vaguely at best, tending to simplistically conflate them into one evil entity. Navani and Yasna had begun to research them over the last weeks, but they still didn't know very much. She finished her sketch of the pain spren, then did one of the exhaustion spren they'd seen earlier. She'd managed to glimpse some hunger spren around a refugee on their way. Oddly, those didn't look any different. Why?
"Need more information," Shallan thought. "More data."
What was the most embarrassing thing she could think of?
"Well," Elokar said, "though we didn't order the parchment executed, only exiled,
At least that order seems to have reached Aesudan. She must have been free enough from the control of the dark forces to heed our words via Spanreed. Of course, he didn't mention the logical problems. If the tailor was correct about the Darkspren arriving during the Everstorm, then Aesudan had executed the Ardent on her own, as that had happened before. Likewise, the order to exile the Parshman would also have come before the Everstorm. And who knew if an unmade could even influence someone like the Queen? The Spren in Urethiru had mimicked people, not controlled them. Yokska did seem to be a little scattered in her retelling of events, so maybe Elokar could be forgiven for mixing up the timeline. Either way, Shallan needed something embarrassing. When I spilled wine the first time Father gave me some at a dinner party. No, something more. Oh, Yokska said. Your Majesty, you should know. The proclamation requiring the execution of the Parshman? Well, a coalition of important light eyes didn't follow it. Then after that terrible storm, the Queen started giving other orders, so the Light Eyes went to meet with her.
Let me guess, Kaladin said. They never came back from the palace.
No, Bright Lord, they did not. How about when I woke and faced Yasna after I'd almost died and she'd discovered that I'd betrayed her? Surely remembering that event would be enough. No? Bother.
So the Parshman, Adolin said. Did they get executed?
No, Yokska continued. Like I said, everyone was concerned with the riots, save for the servants posting the Queen's orders, I suppose. The Wall Guard eventually took action. They restored some measure of order in the city, then rounded up the Parshmen and exiled them to the plain outside. And then the Everstorm came, Shallan said, covertly undoing the button on her safe-hand sleeve. Yokska seemed to shrink down in her seat. The others fell silent, which provided the perfect opportunity for Shallan. She took a deep breath, then strolled forward, holding her sketchpad as if distracted. She tripped herself over a roll of cloth on the floor, yelped, and tumbled into the center of the ring of chairs. She ended up sprawled on the floor, skirts up about her waist, and she wasn't even wearing the leggings today. Her safe hand bulged out from between the sleeve buttons, poking into the open right in front of not just the king, but Kaladin and Adolin. Perfectly, horribly, incredibly mortifying. She felt a deep blush come on, and shame spren dropped around her in a wave. Normally they took the shape of falling red and white flower petals. These were like pieces of broken glass. The men, of course, were more distracted by the position she'd gotten herself into. She squawked, managed to take a memory of the shame spren, and righted herself, blushing furiously and tucking her hand in her sleeve. That, she thought, might be the craziest thing you've ever done, which is saying a lot. She grabbed her sketchbook and bustled away, passing Yokska's white-bearded husband. Shallan still hadn't heard him speak a word, standing in the doorway with a tray of wine and tea. Shallan grabbed the darkest cup of wine and downed it in a single gulp, feeling the stares of the men on her back.
Shallan? Adolin piped up.
I'm fine, that was an experiment, she said, ducking into the showroom and throwing herself into a seat placed there for customers. Storms, that was humiliating. She could still see partway into the other room. Yokska's husband walked with his silver tray to the group. He stopped by Yokska, though serving the king first would have been the correct protocol, and rested a hand on her shoulder. She put her own on his. Shallan flipped open her sketchpad and was pleased to see more shame spren dropping around her. Still glass. She started a drawing, burying herself in it to keep from thinking about what she'd just done.
So, Elokar said in the next room, we were talking about the Wall Guard. They obeyed the Queen's orders?
Well, that was around the time that the High Marshal appeared. I've never seen him, either. He doesn't come down from the Wall much. He restored order, so that's good. But the wall guard doesn't have the numbers to police the city and watch the wall, so they've taken to watching the wall and mostly leaving us to just survive in here.
Who rules now? Kaladin asked.
Nobody, Yokska said.
Various high lords.
Well, they basically seized sections of the city.
Some argued that the monarchy had fallen, that the king,
I beg pardon, your majesty, had abandoned them. But the real power in the city is in the cult of moments.
Shallan looked up from her drawing. Those people we saw on the street? Adolin asked. Dressed like Spren?
Yes, your highness, Yokska said. I don't know what to tell you. Spren looks strange sometimes in the city, and people think it has to do with the queen, the weird storm, the parshmen. They're scared. Some have started claiming they can see a new world coming, a truly strange new world. One ruled by Spren. The Vorin Church has declared the cult of moments a heresy, but so many of the Ardents were in the palace when it grew dark. Most of those remaining took refuge with one of the High Lords who claimed small sections of Kolinar. Those are increasingly isolated, ruling their districts on their own. And then there are the Fabrials.
Fabrials.
Shallan scrambled to her feet and stuck her head into the next room. What about the Fabrials?
If you use a Fabrial, Yokska said, of any sort, from Spanry to Warmer to Painrail, you'll draw them. Screaming yellow Spren that ride the wind like streaks of terrible light. They shout and swirl about you. That then usually brings the creatures from the sky, the ones with the loose clothing and long spears. They seize the Fabrial and sometimes kill the one trying to use it.
Storms, Shallan thought.
Have you seen this? Kaladin asked. What did the Spren look like? You heard them speak?
Shallan glanced at Yokska, who had sunk down farther in her seat.
I think maybe we should give the good tailor a break, Shallan noted. We've shown up on her doorstep out of nowhere, stolen her bedroom, and are now interrogating her. I'm sure the world won't fall apart if we let her have a few minutes to drink her tea and recover.
The woman looked at Shallan with an expression of pure gratitude.
Storms! Adolin said, leaping to his feet. Of course, you're right, Shallan. Yokska, forgive us, and thank you so much for...
No need for thanks, your highness, she said.
Oh, I did have passion that help would come, and here it is.
But if it pleases the king, a little rest?
Yes, a little rest would be much appreciated.
Kaladin grunted and nodded, and Elokar waved a hand in a way that wasn't quite dismissive, more just self-absorbed. The three men left Yokska to rest and joined Shallan in the showroom, where light from the setting sun streamed between the drapes on the front windows. Those would normally be open to show off the tailor's creations, but no doubt they'd lately spent most of their time closed. The four gathered together to digest what they'd discovered.
Well? Elokar asked, speaking, for once, in a soft, thoughtful tone.
I want to know what's going on with the wall guard, Kaladin said. Their leader. None of you have heard of him?
High Marshal Azure? Adolin asked.
No, but I've been away for years. There are bound to be many officers in the city who were promoted while the rest of us were at war.
Azure might be the one feeding the city, Kaladin said.
Someone is providing grain. This place would have eaten itself to starvation without some source of food.
At least we've learned something, Shallan said. We know why the Spanreeds cut off.
The Voidbringers are trying to isolate the city, Elokar said. They locked down the palace to prevent anyone from using the Oath Gate, then cut off communication via Spanreeds. They're stalling until they can gather a large enough army.
Shallan shivered. She held up her sketch pad, showing them the drawings she'd done.
Something is wrong with the city's Spren.
The men nodded as they saw her drawings, though only Kaladin seemed to catch what she'd been doing.
He looked from the drawing of the Shamespren to her hand, then raised an eyebrow at her. She shrugged. Well, it worked, didn't it?
Prudence, the king said softly. We mustn't simply rush in and fall to whatever darkness seized the palace. But we also can't afford to be inactive.
He stood up straighter. Shallan had grown so accustomed to seeing Elokar as an afterthought, a fault of the way Dalinar increasingly had been treating him. But there was an earnest determination to him, and yes, even a regal bearing. Yes, she thought, taking another memory of Elokar. Yes, you are king, and you can live up to your father's legacy.
We must have a plan, Elokar said. I would gladly hear your wisdom on this matter, Windrunner. How should we approach this?
Honestly, I'm not sure we should. Your Majesty, it might be best to catch the next high storm, return to the tower, and report back to Dalinar. He can't reach us with his visions here, and one of the Unmade could very well be beyond our mission's parameters.
We don't need Dalinar's permission to act, Elokar said.
I didn't mean... What is my uncle going to do, Captain? Dalinar won't know any more than we will. We either do something about Kolinar ourselves now, or give the city, the Oathgate, and my family up to the enemy.
Shallan agreed, and even Kaladin nodded slowly.
We should at least scout the city and get a better feel for things, Adolin noted.
Yes, Elokar said. A king needs accurate information to act correctly. Lightweaver, could you take on the look of a messenger woman?
Of course, Shallan said. Why?
Let us say I were to dictate a letter to Aesudan, the king said. Then seal it with the royal seal. You could act the part of a messenger who had come personally from the Shattered Plains, traveling through great hardship to reach the queen to deliver my words. You could present yourself at the palace and see how the guards there react.
That's... Not a bad idea, Kaladin said.
He sounded surprised.
It could be dangerous, Adolin said. The guards might bring her into the palace itself.
I'm the only one here who has confronted one of the Unmade directly, Shallan said. I'm most likely to be able to spot their influence, and I have the resources to get out. I agree with His Majesty. Eventually someone must go into the palace and see what is happening there. I promise to back off quickly if my gut says something is happening. Pattern said unexpectedly from her skirts. He generally preferred to remain silent when others were near.
I will watch and warn. We will be careful.
See if you can assess the state of the Oathgate, the king said. Its platform is part of the palace complex, but there are ways up other than through the palace itself. The best thing for the city might be to go in quietly, activate it, and bring in reinforcements, then decide how to rescue my family. But do reconnaissance only for now.
And the rest of us just sit around tonight? Kaladin complained.
Waiting and trusting those whom you have empowered is the soul of kingship, Windrunner, Elokar said. But I suspect that Brightness Shallan would not object to your company. And I'd rather have someone watching to help get her out in an emergency.
He wasn't exactly correct. She would object to Kaladin's presence. Vale wouldn't want him looking over her shoulder, and Shallan wouldn't want him asking questions about that persona. However, she could find no reasonable objection. I want to get a feel for the city, she said, looking to Kaladin. Have Yokska scribe the king's letter. Then meet me. Adolin, is there a good spot we could find each other?
The grand steps up to the palace complex, maybe, he said. They're impossible to miss, and have a little square out in front of them.
Excellent, Shallan said. I'll be wearing a black hat, Kaladin. You can wear your own face, I suppose, now that we're past the wall guard. But that slave brand... She reached up to create an illusion to make it vanish from his forehead. He caught the hand.
No need. I'll keep my hair down over it.
It peeks out, she said.
Then let it. In a city full of refugees, nobody is going to care.
She rolled her eyes, but didn't push. He was probably right. In that uniform, he'd probably just be taken for a slave someone bought, then put in their house guard. Even though the Shash brand was odd. The king went to prepare his letter, and Adolin and Kaladin stayed in the showroom to talk quietly about the wall guard. Shallan headed up the steps. Her own room was a smaller one on the second floor. Inside were Red and Vatha, and Ishna, the assistant spy, chatting quietly. "How much did you eavesdrop on?" Shallan asked them.
"Not much," Vatha said, thumbing over his shoulder. "We were too busy watching Ishna ransack the tailor's bedroom to see if she was hiding anything."
"Tell me you didn't make a mess."
"No mess," Ishna promised. "And nothing to report, either. The woman might actually be as boring as she seems. The boys did learn some good search procedures, though."
Shallan walked past the small guest bed and looked out the window at a daunting view down a city street. So many homes. So many people. Intimidating. Fortunately, Vale wouldn't see it that way. There was only one problem. "I can't work with this team," she thought, "without them eventually asking questions." This Kolinar mission would bring it to a head, as Vale hadn't flown with them. She'd been dreading this, and kind of anticipating it. "I need to tell them," she whispered. Pattern said. "It's good. Progress." Rather, she'd been backed into a corner. Still, it had to be done eventually. She walked to her pack and removed a white coat and a hat, which folded up on its side. "Some privacy, boys," she said to Vatha and Red. "Vale needs to get dressed." They looked from the coat to Shallan, then back. Red slapped the side of his head and laughed.
"You're kidding!" "Well, I feel like an idiot."
She'd expected Vatha to feel betrayed. Instead, he nodded, as if this made perfect sense. He saluted her with one finger, then the two men retreated. Ishna lingered. Shallan had, after some debate, decided to bring the woman. Moraes had vetted her, and in the end, Vale needed the training. "You don't look surprised about this," Shallan said as she started changing.
"I was suspicious when you told me to go on this mission," she said. "Then I saw the illusions and guessed."
She paused.
"I had it reversed. I thought Brightness Shallan was the persona. But the spy, that's the false identity."
"Wrong," Shallan said. "They're both equally false." Once dressed, she flipped through her sketchbook and found a drawing of Lynn in her scouting uniform. Perfect. "Go tell Bright Lord Kaladin I'm already out and exploring, and that he should meet me in about an hour." She climbed out the window and dropped one story to the ground, relying on her stormlight to keep her legs from breaking. Then she struck off down the street.
63. Within the Mirror. I returned to the tower to find squabbling children instead of proud knights. That's why I hate this place. I'm going to go chart the hidden undersea caverns of Aemia. Find my maps in Akina. From drawer 1616. Amethyst. Vale enjoyed being in a proper city again, even if it was half feral. Most cities lived on the very edge of civilization. Everyone talked about towns and villages out in the middle of nowhere as if they were uncivilized, but she'd found people in those places pleasant, even tempered, and comfortable with their quieter way of life. Not in cities. Cities balanced on the edge of sustainability, always one step from starvation. When you pressed so many people together, their cultures, ideas, and stenches rubbed off on one another. The result wasn't civilization. It was contained chaos, pressurized, bottled up so it couldn't escape. There was a tension to cities. You could breathe it, feel it in every step.
Vale loved it. Once a few streets from the tailor's shop, she pulled down the brim of her hat and held up a page from her sketchbook as if consulting a map. This covered her as she breathed out stormlight, transforming her features and hair to match those of Vale instead of Shallan. No Spren came, screaming to warn of what she'd done. So light weaving was different from using fabrials. She'd been fairly certain it was safe, as they'd worn disguises into the city, but she'd wanted to be away from the tailor's shop, in case. Vale strolled down the thoroughfare, long coat rippling around her calves. She decided immediately that she liked Kolinar. She liked how the city rolled across its hills, a lumpy blanket of buildings. She liked how it smelled of horn-eater spices in one gust of wind, then of Alethi steamed crabs in the next. Admittedly, those probably weren't proper crabs today, but kremlings. That part she didn't like. These poor people. Even in this more affluent area, she could barely walk a quarter block without having to weave around huddles of people. The mid-block courtyards were clogged with what had probably been normal villagers not long ago, but who were now impoverished wretches. There wasn't much wheeled traffic on the streets. Some palanquins ringed by guards, no carriages. Life, however, did not stop for a war, or even for a second Ahari Etiam. There was water to draw, clothes to clean, women's work, mostly, as she could see from the large groups of men standing around. With no one really in charge in the city, who would pay men to work forges, to clean streets, or chip creme? Even worse, in a city this size, much of the menial labor would have been done by parchmen. Nobody would be eager to leap in to take their place. The bridge boy's right, though, Vale thought, loitering at an intersection. The city is still being fed. A place like Kolinar could consume itself quickly once the food or water ran out. No, cities were not civilized places. No more than a white spine was domesticated just because it had a collar around its neck. A small group of cultists, dressed as Rotspren, limped down the street, the wet red paint on their clothing evocative of blood. Shallan considered these people extreme and alarming, probably crazy, but Vale wasn't convinced. They were too theatrical, and there were too many of them, for all to be truly deranged. This was a fad, a way of dealing with unexpected events and giving some shape to lives that had been turned upside down. That didn't mean they weren't dangerous. A group of people all trying to impress one another was always more dangerous than the lone psychopath, so she gave the cultists a wide berth. Over the next hour, Vale surveyed the city while wending her way in the general direction of the palace. The area with the tailor's shop was the most normal. It had a good functioning market, which she intended to investigate further when not pressed for time. It had parks, and though these had been appropriated by the crowds, the people in them were lively. Family groups, even communities transplanted from outer villages, doing the best they could. She passed bunker-like mansions of the wealthy. Several had been ransacked, gates broken down, window shutters cracked, grounds draped with blankets or shanties. Some light-eyed families, it seemed, hadn't maintained enough guards to withstand the riots. Anytime Vale's path took her closer to the city walls, she entered sections of the city that were the most cramped and the most despondent. Refugees, just sitting on the streets, vacant eyes, ragged clothing, people without homes or community. The closer she drew to the palace, though, the emptier the city became. Even the unfortunates who populated the streets near the walls, where the void bringers were raiding, knew to stay away from this area. That made the homes of the wealthy here in the palace district seem out of place. In normal times, living close to the palace would have been a privilege, and every large compound here had private walls that sheltered delicate gardens and ostentatious windows. but now Vale felt the wrongness of the area as a prickling sensation on her skin. The families living here must have felt it, but they stubbornly remained in their mansions. She peeked through the iron gate of one such mansion and found soldiers on sentry duty, men in dark uniforms whose colors and heraldry she couldn't discern. In fact, when one glanced at her, she couldn't make out his eyes. It was probably just a trick of the light, but storms. The soldiers had a wrongness about them. They moved oddly, rushing in bursts, like prowling predators. They didn't stop to talk to each other as they passed. She backed away and continued down the street. The palace was right ahead. Straight on in front of it were the wide steps where she'd meet Kaladin, but she had some time left. She slipped into a park nearby, the first she'd seen in the city that wasn't clogged with refugees. Towering stump-weight trees, bred over time for height and spread of leaves, gave a shadowed canopy. Away from potential prying eyes, she used stormlight to overlay Vale's features and clothing with those of Lynn. A stronger, more sturdy build, a blue scout's uniform. The hat became a black rain hat, of the type often worn during the weeping. She left the park as Vale, playing a part. She tried to keep this distinction sharp in her mind. She was still Vale, merely in disguise. Now to see what she could find out about the Oath Gate. The palace was built on a rise overlooking the city, and she slipped through the streets to its eastern side, where she indeed found the Oath Gate platform. It was covered in buildings and was as high as the palace, maybe 20 feet up. It connected to the main palace by a covered walkway that rested atop a small wall. They built that walkway right over the ramp, she thought with displeasure. The only other paths up onto the platform were sets of steps cut into the rock, and those were guarded by people in Spren costumes. Vale watched from a safe distance. So the cult was involved in this somehow? Above on the platform, smoke trailed from a large fire, and Vale could hear sounds rising from that direction. Were those screams? The whole place was unnerving, and she shivered, then retreated. She found Kaladin leaning against the base of a statue in a square before the palace steps. Soul cast out of bronze, the statue depicted a figure in shard plate rising as if from waves. Hey, she said softly. It's me. Do you like the boots on this outfit? She raised her foot. Do we have to keep bringing that up? I was giving you a passcode, Bridge Boy, she said, to prove I'm who I say I am. Lynn's face made that clear, he said, handing her the king's letter inside a sealed envelope. I like him, Vale thought. An odd thought, in how much stronger that feeling was to Vale than it had been to Shallan. I like that brooding sense he has about him, those dangerous eyes. Why did Shallan focus so much on Adolin? He was nice, but also bland. You couldn't tease him without feeling bad. But Kaladin, he glared at you in the most satisfying of ways. The part of her that was still Shallan deep down was bothered by this line of thinking. So instead, Vale turned her attention to the palace. It was a grand structure, but more like a fortress than she'd pictured. Very Alethi. The bottom floor was a massive rectangle, with the short side facing toward the storm. The upper levels were successively thinner, and a dome rose from the center of the building. From up close, she couldn't make out exactly where the sunlight stopped and the shadow began. Indeed, the air of darkness felt different from how Urethiru had when the dark Spren was there. She kept feeling that she wasn't seeing it all. When she'd glance away and look back, she could swear that something was different. Had that planter moved? The one running along the grand entry steps? Or had that door always been painted blue? She took a memory, then looked away and back and took another memory. She wasn't certain what good it would do, as she'd had trouble drawing the palace earlier.
"Do you see them?" Kaladin whispered. "The soldiers, standing between the pillars?"
She hadn't. The front of the palace, at the top of the long set of stairs, was set with pillars. Looking closer into the shadows, she saw men in there, gathered beneath the overhangs supported by the columns. They stood like statues, their spears upright, never moving. Anticipation Spren rose around Vale, and she jumped. While two of the Spren looked normal, like flat streamers, the others were wrong. They waved long, thin tendrils that looked like lashes to whip a servant. She shared a glance with Kaladin, then took a memory of the Spren.
"Shall we?" Kaladin asked.
"I shall. You stay here." He glanced at her. "If something goes wrong, I'd rather you be ready out here to come in and help. Best not to potentially get us both stuck in the grip of one of the unmade. I'll shout if I need you."
"And if you can't shout? Or if I can't hear you?"
"I'll send Pattern." Kaladin folded his arms, but nodded.
"Fine. Just be careful."
"I'm always careful." He raised an eyebrow at her, but he was thinking of Shallan. Vale wasn't as foolhardy. The climb up those steps seemed to take far too long. For a moment she could have sworn they stretched into the sky toward the eternal void, and then she was atop them, standing before those pillars. A group of guards approached her.
"I have a message from the king," she said, holding it up.
"To be delivered directly to Her Majesty. I've traveled all the way from the Shattered Plains." The guards didn't break stride. One opened a door into the palace while the others formed up behind Vale, prodding her forward. She swallowed, sweat chilling her brow, and let them force her to that door. That maw. She walked into a grand entryway, marked by marble and a brilliant sphere chandelier. No unmade, no darkness waiting to consume her. She breathed out, though she could feel something. That phantom eeriness was indeed stronger here. The wrongness. She jumped when one of the soldiers put his hand on her shoulder. A man in a captain lord's knots left a small room beside the grand chamber.
"What is this?"
"Messenger," a soldier said.
"From the Shattered Plains."
Another plucked the letter from her fingers and handed it toward the captain lord. She could see their eyes now, and they seemed ordinary. Dark-eyed grunts, light-eyed officer.
"Who was your commander there?"
the captain asked her, looking over the letter, then squinting at the seal.
"Well, I served on the plains for a few years."
"Captain Kolot," she said, naming the officer who had joined the Windrunners. He wasn't Lin's actual commander, but he did have scouts in his team. The captain lord nodded, then handed the letter to one of his men.
"Take it to Queen Aesudan."
"I was supposed to deliver it in person," Vale said, though she itched to be out of this place. To flee madly if she were being honest. She had to stay. Whatever she learned here would be of... One of the soldiers ran her through. It happened so quickly she was left gaping at the sword blade protruding through her chest, wet with her blood. He yanked the weapon back out and Vale collapsed with a groan. She reached for Stormlight by instinct.
"No, no, do as Yasna did."
Pretend. Feign. She stared up at the men in horror, in betrayal, pain spren rising around her. One soldier jogged off with the message, but the captain merely walked back toward his post. Not one of the rest said a word as she bled all over the floor, her vision fading. She let her eyes close, then took in a short, sharp breath of Stormlight, just a tiny amount, which she kept within, holding her breath, enough to keep her alive, heal the wounds inside.
"Pattern, please don't go. Don't do anything. Don't hum. Don't buzz. Quiet. Stay quiet."
One of the soldiers picked her up and slung her over his shoulder, then carried her through the palace. She dared, cracking a single eye, and found the wide hallway here was lined with dozens upon dozens of soldiers, just standing there. They were alive. They'd cough or shift position. Some leaned back against the wall, but they all kind of stayed in place. Human, but wrong. The guard carrying her passed a floor-to-ceiling mirror rimmed in a fancy bronze frame. In it she glimpsed the guard with Lin thrown over his shoulder. And beyond that, deep within the mirror, something turned, the normal image fading, and looked toward Shallan with a sudden and surprised motion. It looked like a shadow of a person, only with white spots for eyes. Vale quickly closed her peeking eye. Storms. What had that been? Don't shift. Stay perfectly still. Don't even breathe. Stormlight allowed her to survive without air. The guard carried her down some steps, then opened a door and walked down a few more. He dropped her none too gently on the stone and tossed her hat on top of her, then turned and left, closing a door behind him. Vale waited as long as she could stand before opening her eyes and finding herself in darkness. She took a breath and nearly choked at the rotten, musty stench. Dreading and suspecting what she might find, she drew in Stormlight and made herself glow. She'd been dropped beside a small line of corpses. There were seven of them, three male and four female, wearing fine clothing, but covered in rot-spren, their flesh chewed at by kremlings. Holding in a scream, she scrambled to her feet. Perhaps these were some of those light eyes who'd come to the palace to talk to the queen? She snatched her hat and scrambled to the steps. This was the wine cellar, a stone vault cut right into the rock. At the door, she finally heard Pattern, who had been talking, though his voice had seemed distant. Shallan, I felt what you told me. Don't go. Shallan, are you well? Oh, the destruction. You destroy some things, but seeing others destroyed upsets you. He seemed pleased to have figured it out. She focused on his voice, something familiar. Not the memory of a sword protruding from her own chest. Not the callous way she'd been dumped here and left to rot. Not the line of corpses with exposed bones, haunted faces, chewed out eyes. Don't think. Don't see it. She shoved it all away and rested her forehead against the door. Then she carefully eased it open and found an empty stone hallway beyond, with more steps leading upward. There were too many soldiers that way. She put on a new illusion of a servant woman from her sketchbook. Maybe that would be less suspicious. It covered the blood, at least. She didn't head back upstairs, but instead took a separate path, farther into the tunnels. This turned out to be the Kolin Mausoleum, which was lined with another kind of corpse. Old kings turned to statues. Their stone eyes chased her down empty tunnels until she found a door that, judging from the sunlight underneath, led out into the city. Pattern, she whispered. Check for guards outside. He hummed and slid under the door, then returned a moment later. There are two. Go back, then along the wall slowly to the right, she said, infusing him. He did so, sliding under the door. A sound she'd created rose from him as he moved away, imitating the Captain Lord's voice from above, calling for the guards. It wasn't perfect, as she hadn't sketched the man, but it seemed to work as she heard booted feet move off. She slipped out and found herself at the base of the rise that the palace sat upon, a cliff of some 20 feet above her. The guards were distracted, walking to her right, so Vale slipped onto a street nearby, then ran for a short time, thankful to finally have a chance to work off some of her energy. She collapsed in the shadow of a hollow building, with the windows broken open and the door missing. Pattern scooted along the ground nearby, joining her. The guards didn't seem to have noticed her. "Go find Kaladin," she said to Pattern. "Bring him here. Warn him that soldiers might be watching him from the palace and they might come for him." Pattern slid away from her. She huddled against herself, back to a stone wall, her coat still covered in blood. After a nerve-wracking wait, Kaladin stepped onto the street, then hurried up to her. "Storms," he said, kneeling beside her. Pattern slipped off his coat, humming happily. "Shallan, what happened to you?" "Well," she said, "as a connoisseur of things that have killed me, I think a sword happened." "Shallan?" "The evil force that rules the palace did not think highly of someone coming with a letter from the king." She smiled at him. "You could say, it made that point quite clear." "Smile. I need you to smile. I need what happened to be all right, something that can simply roll off me. Please." "Well," Kaladin said, "I'm glad we took a stab at this anyway." He smiled. "It was all right. Just another day, another infiltration." He helped her to her feet, then looked to check on her wound, and she slapped his hand. The cut was not in an appropriate location. "Sorry," he said. "Surgeon's instincts. Back to the hideout?" "Yes, please," she said. "I'd rather not be killed again today. It's quite draining."
64. Binder of Gods. The disagreements between the Skybreakers and the Windrunners have grown to tragic levels. I plead with any who hear this to recognize you are not so different as you think. From Drawer 2719, Topaz. Dalinar reached into the dark stone shaft where he'd hidden the assassin's honor blade. It was still there. He felt the hilt under the lip of stone. He expected to feel more upon touching it. Power? A tingling? This was a weapon of heralds, a thing so ancient that common shard blades were young by comparison. Yet, as he slipped it free and stood up, the only thing he felt was his own anger. This was the weapon of the assassin who had killed his brother, the weapon used to terrorize Roshar, murder the lords of Yakaved and Aesir. It was short-sighted of him to see such an ancient weapon merely as the sword of the assassin in white. He stepped out into the larger room next door, then regarded the sword in the light of the spheres he had placed on a stone slab there. Sinuous and elegant, this was the weapon of a king, Ysereza Ilin. "There are some who assumed you were one of the heralds," Dalinar noted to the Stormfather, who rumbled in the back of his mind. "Ysereza, herald of kings, father of storms."
"Men say many foolish things," the Stormfather replied. "Some name Kalek Stormfather, others Jezrian. I am neither of them. But Ysereza was a Windrunner." "He was before Windrunners. He was Jezrian, a man whose powers bore no name. They were simply him. The Windrunners were named only after Ishar founded the Orders."
"Ishi Ilin," Dalinar said, "herald of luck."
"Or of mysteries," the Stormfather said, "or of priests, or of a dozen other things, as men dubbed him. He is now as mad as the rest. More, perhaps."
Dalinar lowered the honor blade, looking eastward toward the origin. Even through the stone walls, he knew that was where to find the Stormfather.
"Do you know where they are?" "I have told you I do not see all, only glimpses in the storms. Do you know where they are?" "Only one," he said with a rumble. "I have seen Ishar. He curses me at night even as he names himself a god. He seeks death, his own, perhaps that of every man.
It clicked. Stormfather.
Yes?
That was a curse. Never mind. Tazim, the god priest of Tukar? Is it him? Is she herald of luck as the man who has been waging war against Imul?
Yes.
For what purpose?
He is insane. Do not look for meaning in his actions.
When were you thinking of informing me of this?
When you asked. When else would I speak of it?
When you thought of it, Delinar said. You know things that are important, Stormfather. He just rumbled his reply. Delinar took a deep breath, trying to calm himself. Spren did not think like men. Anger would not change what the Stormfather told him. But what would?
Did you know about my powers? Delinar asked. Did you know that I could heal the stone? I knew it once you did it, the Stormfather said. Yes, once you did it, I always knew.
Do you know what else I can do?
Of course. Once you discover it, I will know.
But
your powers will come when you are ready for them, not before, the Stormfather said. They cannot be hurried or forced. But do not look toward the powers of others, even those who share your surges. Their lot is not yours, and their powers are small, petty things. What you did in reknitting those statues was a mere trifle, a party trick. Yours is the power Ishar once held. Before he was Herald of Luck, they called him Binder of Gods. He was the founder of the Oath Pact. No Radiant is capable of more than you. Yours is the power of connection, of joining men and worlds, minds and souls. Your surges are the greatest of all, though they will be impotent if you seek to wield them for mere battle.
The words washed over Delinar, seeming to press him backward with their force. When the Stormfather was done, Delinar found himself out of breath, a headache coming on. He reflexively drew in stormlight to heal it, and the small chamber dimmed. That stopped the pain, but it did nothing for his cold sweat.
Are there others like me out there?
He finally asked.
Not right now. And there can ever be only three. One for each of us.
Three? Delinar said. Three Spren who make bondsmiths?
You and Cultivation are two?
The Stormfather actually laughed.
You would have a difficult time making her your Spren. I should like to see you try it.
Then who?
My siblings need not concern you.
They seemed of compelling concern, but Delinar had learned when to avoid pressing an issue. That would only cause the Spren to withdraw. Delinar took the honor blade in a firm grip, then collected his spheres, one of which had gone done.
Have I ever asked you how you renew these?
Delinar held up the sphere, inspecting the ruby at the center. He'd seen these loose, and had always been surprised by how small they actually were. The glass made them look far larger.
Honor's power during a storm is concentrated in one place, the Stormfather said. It pierces all three realms and brings physical, cognitive, and spiritual together momentarily in one. The gemstones, exposed to the wonder of the spiritual realm, are lit by the infinite power there.
Could you renew this sphere now?
I do not know.
He sounded intrigued.
Hold it forth.
Delinar did so, and felt something happen, a tugging on his insides like the Stormfather straining against their bond.
the sphere remained dumb.
"It is not possible," the Stormfather said. "I am close to you, but the power is not. It still rides the storm."
That was far more than he usually got from the Stormfather. He hoped he could remember it exactly to repeat to Navani. Of course, if the Stormfather was listening, he'd correct Dalinar's mistakes. The Stormfather hated to be misquoted. Dalinar stepped out into the hallway to meet Bridge 4. He held up the Honor Blade, a powerful, world-changing artifact. But, like the shard blades modeled after it, the weapon was useless if he left it hidden.
"This," he said to the men of Bridge 4, "is the Honor Blade your captain recovered."
The 20-odd men gathered closer, their curious faces reflecting in the metal.
"Anyone who holds this," Dalinar said, "will immediately gain the powers of a Windrunner. Your captain's absence is interrupting your training. Perhaps this, though only one can use it at a time, can mitigate that."
They gaped at the weapon, so Dalinar held it out toward Kaladin's first lieutenant, the bearded older bridgeman named Teft. Teft reached out, then drew his hand back.
"Layton," he barked, "you're our storming armorer. You take the thing."
"Me?" a stocky bridgeman said. "That's not armor."
"Close enough. I..."
"Air sick lowlanders,"
Rock the Horn Eater said, shoving forward and taking the weapon.
"Your soup is cold. That is idiom for you are all stupid."
The Horn Eater hefted it, curious, and his eyes bled to a glassy blue.
"Rock?"
Teft asked.
"You? Holding a weapon?"
"I am not going to swing this thing," Rock said, rolling his eyes. "I will keep him safe. This is all."
"It's a shard blade," Dalinar warned. "You've trained on those, correct?"
"We have, sir," Teft said. "Doesn't mean one of this lot won't storm and cut their own feet off. But I suppose we can use this to heal it if they do. Sigzel, come up with a rotation so we can practice."
Heal. Dalinar felt stupid. He'd missed it again. Anyone holding this blade had the powers of a Radiant. Did that mean they could use Stormlight to heal themselves? If so, that might be a valuable extra use of the weapon.
"Don't let anyone know you have this," Dalinar told them. "I assume you can learn to dismiss and summon it like an ordinary shard blade. See what you can discover, then report to me."
"We'll put it to good use, sir," Teft promised.
"Good."
The clock fabrial on his forearm dinged, and Dalinar stifled a sigh. She'd learned to make it ding?
"If you'll all excuse me, I have to prepare for an appointment with an emperor 1,000 miles away."
A short time later, Dalinar stood on his balcony. Hands clasped behind his back, he stared out toward the Oathgate transport platforms.
"I did a great deal of business with the Azish when I was younger," Fenn said from behind him. "This might not work, but it is a much better plan than traditional Alethi strutting."
"I don't like him going alone," Navani replied.
"By all reports," Fenn said dryly, "he got stabbed through the chest, lifted a stone roughly the weight of 10 men, then started putting my city back together one rock at a time. I think he'll be fine."
"No amount of Stormlight will help if they simply imprison him," Navani said. "We could be sending him to become a hostage."
They were arguing for his benefit. He had to understand the risks, and he did. He walked over to give Navani a light kiss. He smiled at her, then turned and extended his hand toward Fenn, who gave him a paper packet, like a large envelope.
"This is it, then?" he asked. "All 3 are in here?"
"They're marked with appropriate glyphs," Navani said. "And the span rate is inside, too." They've promised to speak in Alethi during the meeting. You won't have an interpreter from our side as you insist on going alone.
I do, Dalinar said, starting toward the door. I want to try Fenn's suggestion.
Nabani quickly rose and took his arm with her free hand.
I assure you, he said, I will be safe.
No, you won't. But this is no different from 100 other times you've ridden off to battle. Here.
She handed him a small box sheathed in cloth.
Fabriel?
Lunch, she said. There's no telling when those people will feed you.
She'd wrapped it in a glyph ward. Dalinar cocked his eyebrow at it, and she shrugged. Can't hurt, right? That seemed to say. She took him in an embrace, held on an extra moment, more than another Alethi might, then stepped back.
We'll be watching the span read. 1 hour with no communication, and we're coming for you.
He nodded. He couldn't write to them, of course, but he could flip the reed on and off to send signals, an old general's trick for when you lacked a scribe. A short time later, he strode out onto Urethiru's western plateau. Crossing it on his way to the Oath Gate, he passed men marching in formations, sergeants shouting orders, runners carrying messages. Two of his shard-bearers, Rust and Serugiatus, men who had the plate only, practiced with massive shard bows, launching thick arrows hundreds of yards toward a large straw target that Kaladin had placed for them on a nearby mountainside. A significant number of the common soldiers sat around holding spears, staring at them intently. Word had spread that Bridge 4 was recruiting. He'd lately noticed numerous men in the hallways holding a spear for luck. Dalinar even passed a group out here who were talking about swallowing spheres. The Stormfather rumbled with displeasure.
They go about this backward, foolish men. They can't draw in light and become radiant. They first must be approaching radiance and look for light to fulfill the promise.
Dalinar barked at the men to get back to training and to not swallow any spheres. They obeyed with a scrambling rush, shocked to find the blackthorn looming over them. He shook his head, then continued. His path, unfortunately, took him through a mock battle. Two blocks of spearmen pressed against each other on the plateau, straining and grunting, training to hold their formations under stress. Though they carried blunt practice spears, this was mostly shield work. Dalinar saw the warning signs of things going too far. Men were shouting with real acrimony, and anger spren were boiling at their feet. One of the lines wavered, and instead of pulling back, their opponents rammed their shields against them repeatedly. Green and white on one side, black and maroon on the other. Sadius and Aladar. Dalinar cursed and approached the men, shouting for them to pull back. Soon his call was taken up by captains and commanders. The rear ranks of the two practice blocks pulled away, leaving the contestants at the center to devolve into a brawl. Dalinar shouted, and stormlight shimmered along the stones before him. Those who hadn't gotten caught up in the fighting jumped back. The rest got stuck in the stormlight, which glued them to the ground. This caused all but the most furious to stop their fighting. He pulled the last few apart and pushed them down, sticking them by their seats to the stone next to their anger spren. The men thrashed, then saw him and froze, looking appropriately chagrined.
I remember being that wrapped up in battle, Dalinar thought. Is it the thrill?
He couldn't remember feeling it for a long time. He would have the men questioned to determine whether any could feel it. Dalinar let the stormlight evaporate away like luminescent steam. Aladar's officers withdrew their group in an orderly fashion, shouting for the men to start calisthenics. The soldiers from Sadius's army, however, spat at the ground and heaved themselves to their feet, retreating in sullen bunches, cursing and muttering.
They're getting worse, Dalinar thought.
Under Toral Sadius, they'd been slovenly and sadistic, but still soldiers.
Yes, they tended to brawl, but they'd been quick to obey in battle. So they'd been effective, just not exemplary. The new Sadius banner flew above these men. Meridas Sadius Amaram had changed the glyph pair's design, as was traditional. Sadius's squat tower had elongated, and the hammer had changed to an axe. Despite his reputation for running a crisp army, it was obvious he was having trouble controlling these men. He'd never commanded a force this large, and perhaps the murder of their high prince had upset the men to the point that there was nothing Amaram could do. Aladar hadn't been able to provide anything of substance about Toril's murder. The investigation was supposed to be ongoing, but there were no leads. The Spren hadn't done it, but they had no idea who had.
I'll need to take action about those soldiers, Dalinar thought. They need something to tire them out, keep them from getting into fights.
Perhaps he had just the thing. He considered that as he finally made his way up the ramp to the proper Oathgate platform, then crossed the empty field to the control building. Yasna waited within, reading a book and making notes.
What took you? She asked.
Almost had a riot out on the parade ground, he said. Two training formations got interlocked and started bashing one another.
Sadius?
Dalinar nodded.
We'll have to do something about them.
I've been thinking. Maybe some hard labor, strictly supervised in a ruined city, might be just the thing.
Yasna smiled.
How convenient that we're currently providing exactly such assistance to Queen Fen. Work Sadius's troops to exhaustion, assuming we can keep them under control there.
I'll start with small batches to be certain we're not sending more trouble Fen's direction, Dalinar said. Have you had any news from the King's infiltration team at Kolinar?
As anticipated, the Stormfather wasn't able to reach anyone on the team to bring them into a vision. Nor would Dalinar dare risk it. But they'd sent several span reads with Elokar and Shallan.
None. We'll keep watch and tell you the moment we get any sort of response.
Dalinar nodded and shoved down his worry for Elokar and his son. He had to trust that they'd eventually either accomplish their task or find a way to report what was stopping them. Yasna summoned her shard blade. Odd how natural it looked to see Yasna with a sword.
You ready?
I am.
The Reshi girl, Lift, had obtained permission from the Azish court to unlock the Oathgate on their side. The Emperor was, at long last, willing to meet with Dalinar in the flesh. Yasna engaged the device, rotating the inner wall, the floor shimmering, light flashed outside, and immediately stuffy heat surged in through the doorways. Apparently a season of summer was well underway in Aesir. It smelled different here, of exotic spices and more subtle things like unfamiliar woods.
Good luck,
Yasna said as he stepped out of the room. It flashed behind him as she returned to Yuithiru, leaving him to meet the Azish Imperial Court on his own. 65. Verdict. Now that we abandon the tower, can I finally admit that I hate this place? Too many rules. From Drawer 8-1, Amethyst. Memories churned in Dalinar's head as he walked down a long corridor outside the Oathgate control building in Azamir, which was covered by a magnificent bronze dome. The Grand Market, as it was called, was an enormous indoor shopping district. That would prove inconvenient when Dalinar needed to use the full Oathgate. He couldn't see any of the market currently. The control building, which had been treated as some kind of monument in the market, was now surrounded by a wooden set of walls and a new corridor. Empty of people, it was lit by sphere lamps along the walls. Sapphires. Coincidence or a gesture of respect to a Kolin visitor? At the end, the hallway opened into a small room populated by a line of Azish soldiers. They wore plated mail with colorful caps on their heads, great shields, and very long-handled axes with small heads. The whole group jumped as Dalinar entered, and then shied back, weapons held threateningly. Dalinar held his arms out to the sides, packet from Fenn in one hand, food bundle in the other.
"I am unarmed."
They spoke quickly in Azish. He didn't see the Prime or the Little Radiant, though the people in patterned robes were viziers and scions. Both were essentially Azish versions of Ardents. Except here the Ardents were involved in the government far more than was proper. A woman stepped forward, the many layers of her long, extravagant robes rustling as she walked. A matching hat completed the outfit. She was important, and perhaps planned to interpret for him herself.
"Time for my first attack," Dalinar thought.
He opened the packet that Fenn had given him and removed four pieces of paper. He presented them to the woman and was pleased at the shock in her eyes. She hesitantly took them, then called to some of her companions. They joined her before Dalinar, which made the guards distinctly anxious. A few had drawn triangular katari, a popular variety of short sword here in the West. He'd always wanted one.